The Honorable Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open pursuant to adjournment.
You may be seated. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We are here on 2014-1814, the State of Ohio versus Adrian L. Hand, Jr. For the appellant, Mr. Goldmeyer.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court, Stephen Goldmeyer, on behalf of defendant appellant Adrian L. Hand, Jr., I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. As Justice Sotomayor said in JDBV North Carolina, children are not just miniature adults, and they cannot be treated that way. When Mr. Hand was in the juvenile justice system, he was promised special protections and special care. He was promised the ability to work through his troubles and not have his mistakes as a juvenile used against him as an adult. Using his juvenile adjudication against him in his adult case, in this case, broke that promise and violated his right to due process. Apprendi presents an exception to the general rule that juries must make all factual findings that support a conviction and a sentence. The Apprendi exception was girded on the right to a jury trial and on the reliability of prior proceedings that took place with the right to a jury trial to replace, essentially, the jury in the current proceedings. However, juveniles do not have the right to a jury, and that at all of those protections that Apprendi envisioned for a prior conviction aren't present in juvenile cases. Some are, and juveniles do have the right to due process, but some of the, specifically the right to a jury trial is not present at a juvenile
proceeding. Do you think that's the salient feature here that will, you're hanging your hat on the fact that the juvenile court proceedings were to the judge and not a jury?
Your Honor, yes, except not just that they were to the judge, but that he had no right to the jury. And also, the other half of our argument is that this is a new world since all the case law developed, applying Apprendi to juveniles, this new world heralded by Roper and Graham and Miller, and in this court, cases like Long and CP, which explain that kids are different, as I said, and the treatment of kids is entirely
different. So you think we should determine that juveniles have a right to a jury trial? Is that what you're arguing to us this morning?
No. And the lack of jury trials in juvenile proceedings is rested on case law and is well-founded and rests on the informality of those proceedings, that they're less concerned with reliability.
How could we correct the problem that you're raising then if there is a lack of a jury? Would a juvenile request a fact-finding panel?
No, Your Honor. Juveniles' conduct would remain in that bubble of juvenile proceedings as long as there's no right to jury trial.
So then this problem that you're raising is a recurring problem with no solution, is what you're telling us.
Your Honor, the solution would be that this conduct can't be used against him later. So
it doesn't matter how long a record, how much trouble, how many serious crimes one is committed before age 18, that's not to be considered at all
an
adult crime.
So it can be considered, and there are lots of ways that the statute allows it to be considered for purposes of determining recidivism. But in the specific case of using it as a sentencing enhancement under Apprendi, treating it as if it is a conviction under the Apprendi exception, that's where the problem
lies.
So
how would it be used then?
For instance, when a judge is making consecutive sentencing findings and says, I've considered your juvenile record and your contact with the juvenile justice system, and I find, you know, that you deserve consecutive sentences in this case, or determining the length of a sentence, or in bargaining, things like that. In this case, Mr. Hand received a 6-year sentence, 3 years for a firearm specification and 3 years for the offense itself.
The offense was a mandatory sentence that was promulgated by the judge because he felt that he could take into consideration and utilize the juvenile proceedings as a conviction. And you're arguing they're not a conviction for those purposes.
Yes, Your Honor.
What do we do with the statute that says if a person is alleged to have committed an offense and has been previously adjudicated a delinquent child, the adjudication as a delinquent child is a conviction for a violation of law. We just ignore the General Assembly?
No, Your Honor, that, as applied through Apprendi, that would be an unconstitutional application.
Oh, so you want us to declare this statute unconstitutional?
Insofar as it equates a juvenile adjudication with a conviction, that is not in line with this court's understanding of the Constitution and with the United States Supreme Court's understanding, that juveniles are different and need to be treated differently.
Do we have any state courts that have made that statement that for purposes of Apprendi, the juvenile adjudication is not a conviction? Do we have any state courts saying that?
Yes, Your Honor. I cited in the brief, I believe it's a Louisiana case, where the state court held that. But,
Indiana is the only one?
Louisiana, I believe.
Louisiana.
Yes. But I recognize the vast majority of case law is not in favor of this position, but it was
and
also—
the U.S. Supreme Court has not said that.
Yes, Your Honor, this hasn't reached the U.S. Supreme Court. This has only reached high state courts, as Your Honor acknowledged, and the federal circuit courts.
Conversely, how many states have said the opposite?
I don't recall the number offhand, but it is a majority.
It is a majority.
It's a majority of state courts and a majority of the federal district courts have held that a juvenile adjudication can operate as a conviction. But all of those were from before Miller and Graham and this sort of new world that we live in for juvenile justice that was created by the United States Supreme Court and that this court inhabits as well with a lot of the case law that's come out of this court since that time. So this new world doesn't have room for that kind of thinking. That comes from the old world.
Counsel, if we agree with you and find, as you would have us find, then this case goes back for resentencing. And the judge could give the same sentence, couldn't he?
Yes, Your Honor, to the extent that he gave a 6-year sentence, but without the finding of a prior conviction, it would not be mandatory time for the other 3 years. So Mr. Hand would be eligible for judicial release about 3.5 years into his sentence. He would start accruing time for programs that he's a part of, and he would be released early. Whereas as it stands now, he cannot take advantage of any of those programs, some of which happen sort of automatically while he's in these programs. And he can't get the advantage of any of those programs.
Counsel, this isn't the end of the world for horrific juveniles, because if a juvenile is inclined with their illegal activities and they're violent and et cetera, there's always the bind-over option if they're not amenable to treatment in the juvenile system, which then would result in a conviction that would be used to enhance the sentence. So this doesn't preclude all juveniles from the consequences of their actions. It just so happens in this case, Mr. Hand was not bound over as an adult, was retained in the juvenile system, and obviously, no use second-guessing that decision, but now he finds himself in the adult world.
Yes, Your Honor. That's exactly correct. There are many places within the law as it exists for juveniles to be treated in a way that addresses the seriousness of their conduct. As you mentioned, bindover, the serious youthful offender proceedings, which I know are rare, but are available, and other proceedings like those. And as I said, when someone like Mr. Hand goes in front of the court and the court believes you have this long record of juvenile things that you've been involved with, that troubles me. There are ways.
Well, counsel, can we talk a little bit more? I'm over here.
Sorry.
A little bit more about that. Your friends on the other side say this is not something that the juveniles really want, that you wouldn't want a defendant to have to say, I want it to go to the jury. I want the jury to decide whether I actually was delinquent as a juvenile. Or tell me from a practical perspective how you see this playing out in a courtroom for an adult defendant who has a juvenile record.
Your Honor, most simply, that juvenile record cannot be used as a conviction. It can be used in other ways, but it cannot be used as a conviction under the Apprendi exception. So if a court seeks to use that conviction for one of these enhancing statutes, that is something that would have to go to the jury. Not the facts of the prior proceeding, but maybe the existence of the proceeding. It can get a little hairy when you're talking about there's a statute here that is asking courts to do something that is not constitutionally allowed under Apprendi. And so
you have cited both the federal and the state constitutions in your proposition. regarding due process. Is there one that you would wish us to rely on more than the other?
Relying on the federal constitution helps the court take advantage of all this case law from the federal courts about, you know, what due process rights juveniles have. But this court, under the state constitution, has dealt with our juvenile system many times. And so there, the existence of the juvenile system is by statute, and this court can enact whatever due process requirements it sees fit for that statutory creation.
Well, counsel, if we use the federal constitution as a linchpin here and find in your favor, it's going to probably guarantee a path to the United States Supreme Court, whereas if we rely on a state constitution solely, that may not happen.
That's fair, Your Honor.
Would you like to see this case go up to the Supreme Court?
My client would not. As I said, the state constitution and the state juvenile justice system provides ample grounds for this court to think on the lines of the way it did in CP and in these other cases to say juveniles have certain protections in Ohio.
But was that issue briefed for us?
The state
and
versus
looking
federal.
At the briefs, I mean, I recognize over a spirited dissent by myself that this court has relied on the state constitution recently to find additional right protections. Is that question briefed in front of us? Do we need additional briefing to talk about the state constitution?
The question is not briefed explicitly, but I would gladly provide any additional briefing that the court sees fit on that issue.
Although the proposition specifically cites the Ohio Constitution.
That's correct. I cite parallel provisions in both the state and federal constitution.
Counsel, I'd like to get to your real issue here. You're not asking us to grant jury trials to juveniles today, correct?
That's correct, yes,
I find myself in the position of agreeing with Justice Thomas of the United States Supreme Court, where he's talking about these are civil proceedings, quasi-civil proceedings. Right. Can we expand this analysis then? I mean, what if a juvenile was found liable in a civil proceeding for stealing a checkbook? Can that be used as an enhancement as an adult?
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, it's not by statute. There might be barriers to that happening, but that is the concern. Yeah, is that that these proceedings are informal and they're designed to help juveniles. They're not only are they civil. In fact, they're civil with the juvenile's interest in mind, even
well,
more
the,
so
the
than
dissent
a checkbook.
In this case, even talks about that studies have shown the juveniles, when given the opportunity to say, "Well, you got me. Can I go home?" They do that, whereas adults are a little less willing to do that.
Yes, Your Honor. The brain science that undergirded the Graham decision and decisions like it is relevant in this case, too. Many studies show that when juveniles are in juvenile proceedings, they'll admit to things, they'll go along with the system in certain ways. That's all part of why the juvenile system has these protections for children. And that's the basis of the JDB decision, where Justice Sotomayor said, children are not just miniature adults and need to be treated carefully and specially. And Ohio has been wonderful about that, creating this robust juvenile system with an interest in helping youth and putting their mistakes behind them and helping them get out into the world. And this is a step backward in that it takes juvenile actions and these things that are supposed to be left in the graveyard of the forgotten past and dragging them up to hurt somebody as an adult.
Counsel, do you see any of our previous opinions, say on waiver and the right to an attorney and so on, that seem to suggest that juveniles should have more protection because of what seems to be the consequence, the criminal-type consequence of their behavior? Do you see any of those cases going against your position today?
Yes, those cases are not necessarily go against my position, but certainly are in a contrast to what we're asking for in this case. The tension between the seriousness of the result of a juvenile adjudication and the goals of the juvenile justice system is a difficult one to resolve. And the United States Supreme Court and this court has provided direction that tension should be relieved in the favor of the juvenile, not in the favor of the seriousness and providing more protections before serious consequences attach, but in the direction of not attaching those serious consequences, or at least making sure there are ways to get somebody out of the juvenile system and into the adult system, or provide mechanisms for attaching those consequences that are outside of this juvenile justice system, which is a caring system. I'm not using those words lightly. Those are words that this court has used and that the statute uses to describe the juvenile justice system. And as long as the juvenile justice system operates that way, taking an adjudication in that proceeding and harming somebody as an adult because of their youthful infractions violates the promise of that system and that individual's right to due process.
So, counsel, you're not advocating what Judge Posner said in his dissent in the Seventh Circuit, which is the juvenile system is a mess. And that was really where he came out. That was part of his foundation for reaching the conclusions that you would like. We can be supportive of our juvenile system and still rule in your favor. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, Your Honor. In fact, this court can even provide more support to the juvenile system by reaffirming the fundamental truth that the juvenile system should be helping children and prevent problems like this from rearing their heads in the future. If there are no further questions, I would ask the court to reverse to preserve Mr. Hand's right to due process and the promise made to him by the juvenile system.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Mr. French?
Thank you. Madam Chief Justice, may it please the court, good morning. I agree that juveniles are different from adults, and I agree that the juvenile justice system is different from the adult criminal justice system, and that the purposes of juvenile adjudications and treatment and rehabilitation are different from the purposes and principles of sentencing that we have for adults who commit crimes. But what I disagree with is the notion that offenses committed by juveniles must forever be swept under the rug and can never have consequences or ramifications upon offenders later in life.
Counsel, that's not really what this case is about, though, is it? It seems to me that if we were to affirm the Court of Appeals, wouldn't we be now changing the tenor of pleas in juvenile court, whereby the juveniles are now going to have to be told, by the way, young man, we're here to help you, and if you'll admit to your misconduct, it's going to be used against you when you're 32 years old?
No, I don't believe that needs
to
be done.
From a due process standpoint, would that not be required? From this day forward, telling juveniles, this is no longer an informal, we're here to help you proceedings. This is the beginning of a life as a criminal.
No.
Why?
Well, because juvenile adjudications will never have long-term consequences, provided the juvenile does not reoffend. And that is what we're here to discuss. We're here to discuss recidivism. Adrian Hand was not a juvenile when he was sentenced in this case. He was an adult. He committed an adult crime. He received an adult sentence. The only question is whether or not, under the most traditional sentencing consideration that our law has ever recognized, recidivism, whether a recidivist, even if the prior was committed while a juvenile, whether or not that can be factored into a legislative enactment that makes recidivism the principal consideration for imposing a later
that, but
sentence.
Aren't you asking us to consider a juvenile adjudication, which starts with the word true, as a criminal conviction? And that's, I'm not talking about public policy here, I'm talking
yes.
about the Ohio Constitution. Aren't we violating it at this point?
I don't believe you're violating the Ohio Constitution by treating.
Was Mr. Hand told when he admitted true to the juvenile adjudication that it would be used as a criminal conviction against him later in life? Was he told that?
He was not told that.
And where are his due process rights back then?
Well, collateral consequences of prior convictions have never been held to be required to be advised of defendants. The same could be said for adults.
Define collateral consequences. We're into military terms now. What are we talking here?
Well, collateral consequences would be consequences that would arise as a result of the adjudication. The same could be said with adults. When adults enter pleas of guilty or no contest and are convicted, they are not required by the Constitution to be advised that if you reoffend, this conviction that you're pleading guilty to or no contest to today can be used against you to enhance your later sentence. That has never been a constitutional requirement in accepting a plea or in
well, as a parallel, we certainly do that with regard to foreign nationals, don't we? You can't enter a plea anymore in municipal court unless you're told, by the way, you may be deported as a result of this action.
That is correct.
So are we now offering better constitutional provisions to foreign nationals than to the juvenile population?
Juvenile adjudications are founded upon due process rights. The due process clause of the 5th and 14th Amendment. Every court that has considered juvenile adjudications have said that provided that the due process, it's founded on due process and fair treatment. And
they have less due process than an adult, clearly. Substantially.
I disagree that it's substantially different. The only difference, and really the only difference that we're talking about today, is the right to trial by jury under the Sixth Amendment.
And isn't that one of the rights that Apprendi was based on? Even if we set aside, even if we agree with you that juvenile adjudications meet due process, I certainly wouldn't say that they don't meet due process.
Yes.
We're still talking about the right to a jury trial. That's in part what Apprendi was talking about. So when we look at that exception that Apprendi articulated, isn't that what we're talking about? We're not saying juveniles should have a right to a jury trial, but if you're going to use that adjudication, it has to be based on a jury trial. How do you get around that key principle?
Apprendi makes reference to trying facts to a jury, primarily because in Apprendi and all the cases that followed, Apprendi, Alene, Ice, Blakely, all the cases that have followed Apprendi, dealt with adult offenders who have a constitutionally protected right to trial by jury. I don't believe that you can read Apprendi as suggesting that the right to trial by jury is the be-all and end-all of the reliability of a prior conviction.
Isn't it the be-all and end-all if what you're talking about is the Sixth Amendment right to a jury trial? I mean, that to me is the critical point. It's not about due process. It's about a right to a jury trial.
Which adults have, but juveniles don't.
Well, we're just kind of begging the question. I mean, I get the point that a juvenile or an adult who has a juvenile record may not want the jury in certain cases to be the fact finder as to that juvenile adjudication, but shouldn't we leave that to the defendant to decide whether that's something that they want to stipulate to or something that they do in fact want to have go to the jury? And doesn't that then preserve the right to a jury fact finding?
I don't believe that we can jump to the point in suggesting that juvenile adjudications are any less reliable, fundamentally, from a constitutional, fundamental due process standpoint, that a juvenile adjudication is constitutionally deficient or unreliable simply because juveniles are not afforded the right to trial by jury.
But you've jumped back to due process again. I agree with you. It meets due process, but it doesn't meet the right to a jury trial. Not that we want it to be a jury trial, but if it's just the simple fact. If you're going to have that enhancement based on a conviction, it's going to have to be a conviction from a jury. And isn't that really what Apprendi was about?
Well, if you look at the overall circumstances surrounding Apprendi, what when Apprendi spoke of facts that need to be tried to a jury, the facts at issue in Apprendi and all the cases that have followed are really facts that look and feel a lot like elements, and elements of the offense for which the defendant is then and there standing trial. Prior convictions are not elements of the offense, and when they are tried to a jury. But when a prior conviction is a sentencing enhancement, a recidivism factor, and not an element, a disputed element or disputed fact, that I think is the direction and purpose that Apprendi was trying to address. For example, in Apprendi, the defendant was convicted of firing shots into a habitation. He was convicted of that. He was found guilty of that. That offense carried a particular sentence. The judge, however, independent of the factual determination and by a preponderance of the evidence, which is another important key component of Apprendi, the judge found, well, yes, you've been convicted of shooting into a habitation, but I also find by a preponderance of the evidence that your motive in doing so was to retaliate on the basis of the homeowner's race. And therefore, I'm enhancing your sentence based upon my determination of your motive. That was the fact that Apprendi was trying to address as far as a fact that needs to be tried to a jury.
Mr. French, I'm struggling with the real-world practicalities. If we go with Mr. Goldmeier's outcome, he indicates that your statement that the slate would be washed clean and couldn't be considered at all in the sentencing of adult offenders, he says it's not correct, that there would still be, it could come into play just in terms of how the judge decides to impose what is discretionary with the judge in a range
yes.
of penalties. And that in addition to that decision, whether or not concurrent or consecutive sentences, if there are multiple offenses,
yes.
Would still be allowed under the outcome that he is advocating. And wouldn't it also be true that under the outcome he's advocating, the parole boards could consider this defendant has a lengthy juvenile record of the
yes.
same kinds of offenses
yes.
for which he's in prison. So if you lose, all of those things could still happen in the common pleas court. Is that correct? Do you agree with Mr. Goldmeier on that?
I would agree with that. Right. If you look at 29.29.12b-4 that talks about the seriousness and recidivism factors, listed in there as a more serious, more likely to reoffend, higher recidivism, is whether or not there was a prior juvenile adjudication. So it is a sentencing factor that a court can exercise its discretion in incorporating its sentence. But here's the dilemma I have with that. If the right to trial by jury, having been deprived the juvenile, somehow makes the juvenile adjudication constitutionally deficient, and therefore it shouldn't be allowed to be factored in at all, then it shouldn't be allowed to be factored in at all. To suggest
that Mr. you're advocating something that if you lose even bigger than he's requesting.
Well, what I'm suggesting is that the appellant's position is counterintuitive, that they're suggesting that you can use a juvenile adjudication as a recidivism factor in some circumstances, but not the circumstances
allowed here. The judge can discretionally use it. The difference here is it's a mandatory requirement under the under the statute currently to be in the sentencing configuration. It becomes mandatory as the prior conviction.
Yes.
And that's a big difference for the judge to be able to use judicial discretion and determine the interplay of the juvenile record with the current conviction act and the activity underpinning that conviction and this appropriate sentence, whereas in the present situation, that discretion is not there.
That is correct. That is correct. But that distinction should not be impacted by Mr. Goldmile's suggestion that the lack of a right to trial by jury somehow forbids the use of a juvenile adjudication for any future purpose, that it should be buried in the graveyard.
I did not hear him say that that cannot be used for the weighing and balancing the seriousness and recidivism factors. I didn't hear that from him.
Well, he said that, that it should be...
It should remain in the bubble, I think, is what his phrase was. But I think we're here for the purposes of does this conviction... or does this adjudication equate to a conviction for the mandatory sentencing that an adult conviction would trigger? That's the only thing I see before us.
And I would submit that if a juvenile adjudication is fundamentally sound, the juvenile is afforded all due process protections that the Constitution, that this court has said they're entitled to, that the U.S. Supreme Court has said they're entitled to, if a prior juvenile adjudication is constitutionally sound on fundamental fairness and due process grounds, it should be allowed to.
What would be the fundamental fairness test to you in a juvenile proceeding?
All of the recognized due process rights.
Which are?
Right to notice, right to counsel.
Right to counsel when?
In all adjudications, which this court has...
All adjudications. What about at questioning by the police? What about initial pickup?
Within the recognized Fifth Amendment Miranda requirements that would apply to juveniles or adults. We're talking about what happened at the juvenile court during the adjudication process. And if that is fundamentally reliable, and there's no suggestion in this case that Adrian Hand's due process rights were in any way violated or
but
denied.
The words were never spoken to him. This adjudication will remain just that, an adjudication, but if you commit a particular class of crime in the future, it will be transformed to a prior conviction to be used against you. That was never said to him.
That was never said to them, and I'm not aware of any court that has ever suggested that that is a requirement. On at least two occasions in State v.
Wouldn't we? It would be a different story if that had happened, though, wouldn't it? If that warning, or that information was submitted to him at the time of his adjudication, wouldn't we have a very different situation?
We would not have a very different situation if we are basing our decision on whether or not prior adjudications can be relied upon as a recidivist factor, if we're basing that decision on the fact that juveniles are denied the right to trial by jury.
You said earlier that this is a collateral consequence, and that adults don't receive an advisory notice that a conviction can be used to enhance their next criminal activity if it is appropriate. Correct.
Correct.
But isn't the distinction there is it's apples to apples, it's convictions to convictions, whereas in a juvenile system it's a civil matter, it's an adjudication, and an adjudication is not the same as a conviction. And you want to now transform it from an adjudication to a conviction for this purpose?
Yes.
Thank you.
I want to make sure I clearly understand your yes there. I assume that you are agreeing with the chief that the facts of this case don't really go to the constitutionality of this statute, do they?
No. No, they do not.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel, you've used your time. You may take a minute.
Your Honors.
Counsel, are you limiting your argument to 292913F6? Because that's the statute that was involved here. The adjudication as a juvenile was for aggravated robbery, which for an adult would be an F1. And then there was the mandatory term imposed because of that. So are we looking solely with respect to that statute and then the definition under 2901.08?
Yes, Your Honor. And the most important portion would be the 2901.08, which says, in no uncertain terms, a juvenile adjudication is a conviction. And that's the thrust of our argument, is that that is where the problem lies. And under Apprendi, that's unconstitutional. If there are no further questions, I would ask the court to reverse.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, gentlemen. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you will be notified of our decision.